Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Healthcare Business Women's Association Blog Talk Radio Show. My name is Julie Kelly, and I'm HVA volunteer leader and your host for this podcasting program today. Now, for you folks that are not familiar with the HVA is a global nonprofit organization comprised of individuals and organizations from across the healthcare industry committed to achieving gender parity in leadership positions, facilitating career and business connections, and providing effective practices that enable organizations to realize the full potential of their female talents. Now, in our last podcast, Darius Hughes shared that when building an entrepreneurial team, you need to be comfortable with taking calculated risks for better results and more innovation. Now, risk-taking is a common practice amongst many successful entrepreneurs, and all too often we focus on the success that comes from risk-taking, but we don't shine much light on the failures, which are often difficult for people to recognize. However, lessons learned through these failures can really help fuel your growth and success. And that's the podcast topic for today, how failures fuel success. We're hitting this one head-on, team. And thanks to two very brave and confident guest speakers, Dr. Bettina Honan and Karen Luxman, who recognize the importance of failures in your professional development and the value they bring to your growth, we're going to learn a lot today. They're going to share their personal perspectives and experiences and help our listeners embrace failures and move upward with the lessons they learned. So welcome to the podcast, Tina and Karen.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, Julie.
Yes. And as you can hear, we have our European sisters on the phone today. So shout out to our EU chapter of the HBA. So we're going to start a discussion with Bettina, who is a trained clinical psychologist and going to bring some real interesting viewpoints here. Hi, Bettina. Tell us a bit about yourself.
Yes. Hi, Julie. Thanks so much for inviting me today. I am a trained clinical psychologist, as you say. I work with young people, parents and families, and I'm really passionate about strengthening relationships, increasing well-being and preventing mental health difficulties in young people and in adults. So I do this through my clinical work. I also teach. I teach at University College London. I'm from London. You can probably hear from my accent. And I'm recently authored a book called The Incredible Teenage Brain, where we're looking at neuroscience, the latest neuroscience about the teenage brain, and helping parents and teachers to understand the implications of what that means for how we should interact and make the most of the teenage brain with the enormous potential that it offers. So I've got a specialist interest in neuroscience and psychology and kind of how we can translate those findings for, you know, lay audiences.
Excellent. Now, I wish I had a copy of that book back when my kids were teenagers, but I'm still going to go look it up, and maybe I'll still learn something, be able to help grandchildren someday. So thank you for joining, Bettina. Yeah, we appreciate it. And so, Bettina, can you tell me about one of the failures and the impact it had on you?
Yes. Yeah, so I started off life in school. According to my mother, I was doing very well in nursery school. But by the time I left school, I had really opted out academically completely. I wasn't a difficult child, but I definitely failed school when it comes to academics. So in the UK, you leave school with certain qualifications. They're called A-levels. Which you do at the age of 18, and you usually do three, and I got an F, an F, and an X, and an X means you didn't turn up to the exam. So I really left school with no qualifications at all, and I think more importantly, I left school with a belief that I was unintelligent, that there was something a bit wrong with my brain, and I actually came back to education at the age of about 24, when I realized I was really interested in psychology and in development and child development in particular. And somebody said to me, well, you'll have to go to university. And I said, well, I can't do that because I'm not academically able. I'm not clever. But somehow I managed to kind of put one step in front of the other, and I did go back to college. And for those of you who know anything about clinical psychology, you have to get a number of degrees to be a clinical psychologist. So it was a long path, but actually I discovered that I loved learning, and with a topic that I was very interested and motivated in, and some people alongside me to help, I was very successful and have gone on to have this career that is just amazing. It's actually a career of lifelong learning. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. That's amazing. So tell me, how do you think this failure mattered in your development?
Well, the impact, I think, was really significant. I think that is a time in your life as a teenager, as a young person, which is very character-forming. It's the time in your life where you really are developing your self-identity, and the neuroscience is showing us that is really true from a brain point of view. We know that from experience, actually, don't we? But also neuroscience is confirming that. And I think there's also often a fixed narrative around learning and about education, this idea that some people are clever and some people aren't clever and some people can do it, some people can't do it. So within that culture, I came out of school with this strong belief about myself, which was quite a negative belief. It's been hard every step of the way, and people will have heard of imposter syndrome, and that's certainly something that I have struggled with throughout my life. But I've been very lucky, really, in having the opportunities and having the people next to me to be able to kind of hold my hand in those difficult moments. But the impact was significant, I would say, particularly because it happened when I was such a young person.
So you have a lot of support. Tell me about picking yourself up and being resilient and keep going on, because you know, after your initial academic performance to really exceed and now be a doctor, Dr. Bettina Honan, you know, tell me where you got the chutzpah to stand back up, brush yourself off, and go at it again.
Yeah. Well, I think what happens when we fail is that there's a couple of things that go on. First of all, I think we make sense of that. We have a kind of tape in our head that tells us why that happened. So if you think that failure was to do with something internal, I'm not intelligent, I'm not a good speaker, I'm not attractive, or whatever it is, then I think that has an impact on your core self-esteem. But I think that can also be very powerful in terms of what you do next. So I think what's very important is to be aware of what that voice is and go, okay, well, I've put that down to me being intelligent, but maybe there's another interpretation. Maybe there were circumstantial reasons why that thing didn't go so well for me. And then I think that has an impact on what you then do next. So if you have that internal voice that says, I can't do it, this very kind of fixed mindset, then you're more likely to retreat and not try and kind of go towards your goal. So I don't know if people have heard of fixed and a growth mindset. It's something comes out from Carol Dweck. It's been a very powerful notion within education. So a fixed mindset idea is this idea that we are either good at things or we're not good at things. You can't change it. I'm intelligent, I'm not intelligent. You know, I'm strong socially, I'm not strong socially. But actually that doesn't fit with what we know about the brain and how the brain develops, because our brains develop in response to experience. So the more we do something, the stronger the circuits are in our brain at doing that thing. So the first time you hit a ball, you don't have a circuit in your brain that is able to hit a ball because you've never done it before. We're not born with skills. We develop skills according to what we do. Mm-hmm. So the more we do that thing, more we hit that ball, the more we stand up and do that public speaking, the more we apply ourselves to an academic skill, the stronger that circuit becomes, the more competent we become. So that's a growth mindset. So I think what we need to have – sorry, what was that?
Mm-hmm. No, I was going to say, so it's actually imperative that you stand back up and try it again, because you're developing
absolutely
that skill and the ability for the brain to learn it. Excellent. Okay, I get it.
Yeah.
So retreating isn't an option if you want to move forward, because you're just not going to develop the skill.
It's not an option, exactly. So you have to work out what your thoughts are telling you, make sure you haven't got this fixed mindset, and then you have to put yourself in the situation to go, I'm going to try again. And then I would say when you're in that situation of trying again, the most important thing, the most fundamentally important thing is to have somebody alongside you. So the other thing we're learning from neuroscience is how fundamentally social we are. Our brains are tuned to focus into kind of social factors and social, they need social relationships in order to function at its best. So there have been some really fascinating studies actually in this area that I could just tell you about.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll have to schedule another podcast for that one, but... We certainly want to know more about that at a point in time. But one last question for you. You know, you mentioned the imposter syndrome. Could you elaborate on that before we transition?
Sorry, could you say that again?
Could you elaborate on the imposter syndrome? You mentioned that earlier in your dialogue about women being less likely to accept success. Yes.
Yeah, so an imposter syndrome is this idea, it's when you're in a situation of feeling like you're an imposter, that you shouldn't be there. So it can happen if you're in a meeting or in a situation at work or in academics, wherever it is, where you just think, this is it. This is the moment when I've been caught out. I really shouldn't be here. And it's an internal voice in your head, and that's absolutely something that has happened for me. I think there are internal barriers to that. There are internal things that will cause that, and for me, failing at school was one of them. But then there are also, you're fighting this kind of external barrier, this kind of cultural norm, particularly around gender. So definitely for me, the effect of imposter syndrome was always doubting myself at every juncture. I remember very clearly thinking to myself, on the way to various difficult meetings, like the first time I was doing my PhD and I had to do a presentation, and it was really hard. It was a hard paper I'd been given. And just thinking, it's fine. I will just resign after I've done this presentation. It's clear this is not for me. I'm obviously not intelligent enough. So, you know, imposter syndrome is really going back to that narrative, often from earlier in your life, that's very negative, very fixed. But as a woman, I think we also struggle, don't we, to claim our own ideas, and that has been an aspect of my life. You know, easily giving things away, being too concerned about what people think of me, not necessarily asking to be paid for the work that I do. If I find myself taking a kind of leadership position, thinking, gosh, I'm so bossy, you know, I shouldn't be like that. So I think all of these factors to do with my childhood and also to do with being a woman have had an impact on my ability to kind of put myself forward throughout my working life. I'm 52 now and I'm getting there. I'm getting closer.
Well, Bettina, it's quite a story, and I thank you for being so candid with our audience, because certainly a lot to learn there. We look forward to speaking with you on some future podcasts. So let's position, let's transition now and talk to Karen Luxman, who is a commercial leader for contract manufacturing in Europe for Pfizer. So welcome, Karen. Tell us a bit about yourself.
Yeah, thanks, Julie. Thanks for having me on the show. So I'm trained, I'm a trained chemical engineer, and I do have an MBA. I've been working in the pharmaceutical industry for more than 20 years now, and I held a broad variety of commercial roles in two countries, the UK and Germany. You will hear this from my funny accent, across Europe and globally. And I'm currently working for Pfizer, as mentioned, in a European role in the contract manufacturing area.
Great. And when you're not working for Pfizer, what do you do to fill the gaps?
Well, actually, I have two children. They keep me busy. What I really like and what they like too is just to be curious, to explore my still new home country, which is the UK, and there is a lot to see, and that's what we like to do.
Excellent. Well, thank you for joining, Karen. And now, prior to this podcast, you mentioned that you believe that failure is important in times of change, constant change. It's an integral part of that. Can you tell us about that thought?
Absolutely. So constant change is really, really important. And everybody working in the industry, they experience this over and over again. Very often this is happening at very, very high pace. And you will agree with me, we all have experienced how this can make one feel. Deep in our hearts, we know that change is good. However, on the flip side, it can be really, really tough. And the tough bit has to do with failure. On an objective side, we all know that, is the enabler for innovation and improvement, but it feels different. Personally, I differentiate between two types of failure. Both of them have impacts on individuals or teams. The first one I call rational failure. It's in those situations when you spend weeks or months investing a lot of time and energy and passion into a project, and then suddenly there is an obvious reason for why the project is stopped. Examples maybe that you're working in R&D and the type of clinical trial you've been engaged with has to be stopped due to unforeseen circumstances. Or if working in a commercial role, the deal you've been preparing for months was in the end not acceptable to the customer. In all of those cases, the reasons for the failure can be explained and you're very likely to be moved on to a different project or task, and you move on. Of course, letting go what you've been so passionate about for a long time is not always easy. However, the second type of failure tends to hurt so much more. It's called, I call it the emotional failure. It's these kind of situations where there is no obvious reason. You blame and question yourself over and over again, especially at nighttime, for a personal failure others may not even see. Example is that being made redundant in a structural reorg, which won't require your team anymore, and you reflect whether this has happened simply because you just haven't been good enough in all of those years. You will agree with me, such feelings are super hard to avoid and are simply painful. What both of those failures have in common, the more it hurts personally, the more opportunity you have to grow. The reason for this is that the more it hurts, the more you are literally forced to reflect and to deal with your emotions and behaviors and eventually come to a point to free up new energy for some really new and innovative things, whether a new idea or a new job. It'll make you grow. In my personal example, there were kind of existing job opportunities I took, which I've never thought of I could fit in at all. Or one of those situations made me move to a different country, a single mom of two little boys. It made me grow, and looking back, it's something I definitely do not want to miss, despite the scars and the pain it left behind.
Yeah, we've been there. Everybody's been there. And I echo your thoughts there. You know, sometimes we spend so much time mulling over a decision that does not make sense, and we stay awake at night saying, what did I do? Why was I made redundant? You know, did I fail? And sometimes there's no logic behind it. And I always say you're better off taking all that energy and putting it towards your next opportunity. And it's very easy to say, and I think it's something you only learn through experience, Karen. I echo your thoughts on that. So here's this other thought. What do you think about leadership and failure? You know, you're the leading a team and you fail, and tell us about that.
Yeah, so as a leader, so the theory is, of course, the rational part of it is that the leader selects the right team, provide a team vision, mission, strategy, etc., establish and implement the right culture and empower the team to live it. Also, leader's expectation is to allow the team to experiment, to make mistakes and grow from them, and even go a step further, be authentic, and talk about your own failures and vulnerabilities. That's the theory. Mm-hmm. However, mm-hmm. as a leader, the question is really, is this a big risk for a leader to show, I'm making mistakes too, I'm allowing mistakes, what does this do to my business results, all of those things. Mm-hmm. Taking a step back, let's be honest, we're not talking about establishing a laissez-faire culture. And if you think about how big this risk is, we're not talking about taking big risks here. It's simply allowing yourself as a leader and colleagues to do things differently to what you and Dave done before. It's simple things. It's tiny little things. And the outcomes can be very surprising and are mostly very rewarding for colleagues, the leaders, and business outcomes.
Right. So model small risks and small failures as a leader. Make sure everyone knows that it's okay to take risks. It's okay to fail. A focus on the positives that come out of that.
And be courageous to do so. It's not always easy.
Yes. It's not always easy. Some good points there. Thank you, Karen. So tell me, what do you think what's the biggest failure that can happen?
For me, the biggest failure that can happen is the failure of not trying, whether it's not having the courage to try or because you have given up trying because of previous negative experiences, which happens, unfortunately, a lot of times. Why is that? The most important thing is to know who you are and what you're really passionate about. You can only be at your very, very best if you're true to your personal goals. And being at one's personal best gives back so much additional energy and joy, which we all need for everything we do on a day-to-day basis. So for me, it's easy. The biggest failure is not to stand in for what is really important to you.
Thank you, Karen. Do you have any closing tips or thoughts for the listeners?
Maybe as a closing tip, let me share my personal mantra with you, which I always use and which always makes me feel better when I'm stuck in this emotional roller coaster after failure. It's one of those famous Oscar Wilde quotes, and it says, "Everything will be okay in the end. If it's not okay, it's not the end."
I love it. I love it. Thank you, Karen.
Hey, it helps.
Bettina, do you have any closing thoughts from your perspective for our audience?
Yes, I think there are some questions you can ask yourself. I think if you've had a failure and you're struggling with it, have I made an internal attribution about that failure? Have I put it down to something that is a fixed personal characteristic? Or is there another way of seeing it? It's circumstantial. It's to do with a skill that I haven't yet developed because my brain hasn't yet developed those circuits strongly enough. Do I have a growth mindset in my voice when something doesn't go well? See it as something I need to jump back on and do it some more? And do I have a mentor or someone alongside me who can metaphorically kind of hold my hand while I try to do it again? Because that's the way in which your brain will function the best.
Excellent. Thank you both for joining the program today. And my mantra is success is failure turned inside out. I know that I didn't create that, but when I have those negative thoughts in my head about failure, you know, I say, what do I learn and how can I succeed using this knowledge? So that's it for today's podcast. I hope you all can take something away from this podcast and see that failure in a completely new way. Thanks again to our guest speakers, Bettina and Karen, for sharing your perspectives and with the wider HBA community. For starting this great dialogue. And without leaders like yourselves sharing your experience and empowering others to do the same, the HBA mission cannot be realized. So if you want to get involved and share your thoughts with our EU team, please share and tag us at @habanet_EUR #podcast. Thanks again. And this is Julie Kelly signing off for the HBA.